It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. Today we have on Valerie Jardin, who is the Managing Director of Strategy at Interior Architects, the first firm that was focused exclusively on interiors. They've expanded beyond that now. They're a global firm of 18 offices. And she is here to tell us, to talk to us about the intersection of experience and space. We're going to get into what space can and can't do for your culture and thinking about sort of the intentionality of the space or what happens when you're not intentional with the space and where we are in this kind of hybrid distributed world and the role of space going forward. So, Valerie, we're going to cover a lot of stuff. Thank you for coming on Great Mondays Radio. I'm so excited to talk to you about this.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah. So quickly, your role. So you are the head, you're the managing director of strategy at an architecture firm. What does that mean?
Yeah, so we actually blew up strategy at the beginning of the year. The firm has always had a strategy practice, but as of January 1st this year, being a managing director of strategy meant we are leading a multidisciplinary team that brings a lot of human sciences to the table so that we can bring a lot of academic and trusted, tried research out in the world into practice more actively. So for us, we work with large global organizations, actually all scale of organizations, and we go in, we're the front line essentially to the design team, and we go in and we help understand their culture, how place can support their culture, what their future goals and drives are, and we set the stage. So hopefully design comes in after us and makes it beautiful.
All right. So you're going to go and talk to them about culture and help them explore that and understand that. So let's just start with the kind of the broad thesis around experience, the intersection of experience and space. Can you just if you have a really amazing workspace, does that is that enough to do the work of culture?
Not enough. It's one leg of the stool, but it's definitely something that will make a big impact, because it's you know, giving somebody someplace nice to go, showing them that you have thought about what they need, giving them the resources to do their jobs and to have balance in their lives and all of these things that actually can definitely support a positive culture. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're really striving for, is to help people align that goal back to their space. But on the flip side, if they have crappy space,
yeah,
no one wants to come in. They're going to do the bare minimum and they don't really, you know, the space doesn't work for them. So they're not going to be as productive.
Right. It does feel like you use this term supportive. And so we're going to give you, giving you kind of the amenities, the opportunities, the place to do your work, we're demonstrating that we care about you as an employee. So we're Absolutely. Giving you everything we can. Do you have examples of, or is it, have you seen where a space actually enables someone to go beyond that kind of like, great, I feel taken care of, I've been given the opportunity, but like even engage further, right? To go even like, what is the outer limits of what a space can do?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. Let's think about that. They have, there's definitely clients that have gone above and beyond. And even if we just think about, you know, the COVID, post-COVID kind of thing, pre-COVID, post-COVID, there was a lot of things pre-COVID that people didn't talk about a lot, culture being one of them. Experience yep. being one of them, wellness being one of them. And so those were things that we tried to push before COVID. And of course, after COVID, everyone was kind of scattered and running to find those things and implement them where they could. But the companies that did and had the best return to office experiences were the ones that had already thought about that stuff prior to the pandemic happening. And they gave them, you know, autonomy over their spaces. They gave them a variety of spaces for them to work in. They gave them access to you know, up-to-date environments, access to daylight and views, pulled on the psychological triggers of, you know, playing with scale and visual complexity and all of these things that balanced and made people feel excited to be there. And they were connected and they were able to, you know, find each other, have their water cooler moments or whatever, serendipitous interactions, build social capital. They got their work done. They found the environments they needed to go to do it. And so that those cultures, the people that lived that and really put that into play prior to COVID, succeeded, and they were a whole lot easier coming out of the pandemic than the ones that were always very siloed, regimented environments. Maybe they weren't, you know, hadn't been remodeled in a very long time. They were darker, dingier, and then people just didn't have as much excitement to return. So I think from that aspect, that was a big success story, was seeing how, you know, the pullback after COVID, you know, if space was done right, you had a much easier time
getting people back.
Yeah.
What are the, in your experience, what are the benefits? Let's just kind of go a little bit further, push a little bit further, right? You've sort of mentioned them, but there's been a lot of articulation around, you know, should we, do we need to go back to the office? So you're describing environments that allow people to have the flexibility to kind of do the work. It's almost like you're competing with the amenities of home, right? So mm-hmm. it's either home or it's work. And so we can do better. We can give you more at work, but what are the ways that, or the ways that people can be more, I don't want to just say productive or effective or useful when you go into an office and we'll presume well-designed?
Yeah. I guess the you know, when it comes to home, it's very hard to fight home.
it's hard to, if there's one thing we've learned, right? It's hard to fight home.
It's hard to fight home. Like, we're comfortable there. We don't have to get as dressed up there. We don't have the commute. And honestly, the commute is a big part of why people don't want to come in. I mean, it's multifaceted, but commute is a big one. And home is always going to be hard to compete with. But at the end of the day, home is not the same for everybody. And so what we have found since COVID is that it's really the younger generations that really want to be in. They don't have the social capital. They don't know the culture of the company. They don't have the years of experience. And it's the more seasoned employees that are saying, I'm in love with home. They're also the ones that probably can afford to have a really nice home office that's well-appointed and off, you know, not sitting at their kitchen table. And so that makes a huge difference in how people are showing up and what you're competing with. But again, from the commute perspective, the younger folks can't necessarily afford to live as close to the office. So they're trekking in however they need to get there. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, that means commute is not a complete deterrent. You know, it's about the drive and the value you see once you're there. But, you know, if you get there and the office is empty, you're not going to feel connected to anything.
Yeah, right. What was the reason for showing up?
Yeah, exactly. So that's a big part of it. And we're seeing clients even starting to look at using AI to help, you know, monitor schedules and things. And how can I get a recommendation of, hey, my team is all going to be in that day, or the people I'm meeting with that day are going to be there. So I'm going to go in and make sure I'm there as part of that. And so I'm actually hopeful that AI can help a lot with just some of the coordination issues that we're seeing with the structured hybrid, which is kind of king right now in terms of how people have come back.
Structured hybrid. Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, what I have seen work the best is when you have an intentional reason for showing. You have an intentional mm-hmm. schedule, but you have a reason for showing up. So exactly. I saw a lot of orgs early post-pandemic just say, all right, you can come in. And then it was like, all right, come in, you know, 2 to 3 days a week. All right, come in on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But then it's like, I still don't. Okay, fine. I'm seeing people there. But it's when you have a reason, we're going to have brainstorming. We're going to do meetings. We're going to have our whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. The kind of work that showing up makes a difference for matters.
Absolutely.
Is that what you've observed as well? Have you seen anything else in that?
No, I would say that's accurate. But we also can't be siloed into the thinking of like people are only showing up for collaborative work. That somehow we got into this mentality that it was like people come to the office to collaborate. People come to the office to see people. And yeah, that's a huge part of it. And it's a big driver as to why people come in. But once they're there, they still have focus work they have to do. So the space also has to work and support them when they need to concentrate. Mm-hmm. And some people don't have good focus space at home. So they need to be able to come in and have that be, you know, working really, really well for them. We talk about things like task complexity too. And, you know, the more complexity you have in your task, which you get more complexity with higher up individuals. So if you're, I don't want to say lower, but if you're a more entry level employee, you have less complex tasks. And so for those folks, it's really important that space, because they only need a handful of things when they come in. They need their chair, they need their desk, they need a meeting room, they need, you know, their coffee. Don't mess with people's coffee. But if you have those things, you know, that's a short list. So if you get any one of those things wrong, you're now messing with a huge core of your, you know, kind of entry level, lower end staff. Whereas the higher complexity tasks, they're associated with more management. And so they need a laundry list of things. And Leisman's done a lot of research on this, like, I don't know, 52 things or something like that. They identify as needing to do their job. So you have a little bit more room for, you know, oops or an error here and there. But at the end of the day, they still have to have all of the things work for them too, or they're not going to want to come in either. So you have to balance that level of complexity with the design so that you are really making everything work well for everybody. Convenience. I always talk about convenience.
Oh, okay. Tell me about what does convenience mean? Right. And in context of work, why did that just pop out as a term?
Because we make things inconvenient for people. Like we put so much effort into policies and, you know, we say you have to be here now on these days, or we're mandating you to come back, or, you know, you have to be here between these hours or whatever the, you know, we're putting stipulations on people and how they do their work. And the reality of the world is that we're a lot more fluid. We're a lot more connected globally. We have totally different hours and time zones that we're working in. And so we need to be a little bit more, we need to give a little bit more convenience to our folks and let them figure out what works best for them and how they work. One of the failures of convenience is, you know, we say we're going to take your desk away. We want to shrink our footprint. We don't have as many people coming in. So we're going to take your desk away. And that's that, not having that one-to-one ratio of a person to owning a desk actually really negatively impacts, you know, somebody's initiative and convenience factor of wanting to come in. And then on top of it, you say, now you're going to get an unassigned desk. And before you come in, you got to book it. Because if you don't book it, then you'll get here and you may not have a desk. And so now you're adding a step to their day that's already complex and hairy and, you know, all kinds of things. And so we're taking away more convenience. So it's things like that that are, you know, we try to talk to our clients about and educate them on, like, how can we remove the excuses?
It does feel like the conversation can fluctuate between like the benefits for the company and the benefits for the employee. Mm-hmm. Like you said, we're going to, oh, hey, guess what? We're going to close our main office that's downtown, and we're going to open up a collaborative lab in the cool part of town. Mm-hmm. And it, the function of that becomes very different. And you're, like you said, there's no desks there. What am I supposed to do? And so you're inherently maybe deterring people, right? So you think you're saving money on your footprint, on your real estate, but maybe you're, there's just so many invisibilities, I think, or visible like aspects to your work that you're just not understanding. And I guess that's part of what you're trying to bring to the table here, right? It's like you're trying to visualize or help make visible the thing, the impacts of the way these are, things are designed so that they can make better choices. And which is, like, to me, really an important part of this conversation, because so many of the executives, right? We've got the, like, the Jamie Dimons of the world, of the, you know, like, the financial services were the first to be like, get the fuck back to the office. Like, this is, we've always done it this way. You can do it too. Right. And that's, you know, it's like, okay, but you're not understanding what's happening, and you maybe are not want to, but
yeah. Well, and I read a really good article not too long ago about the whole purpose of mandates and how it, you know, at the core root of it, could you argue that it is an ego stroke? Because
I could.
You don't. Yeah. When you're at home, like, your wife's not coming up to you and telling you, like, you know, asking permission and saying what a great job you're doing. You know, like, you're in the workplace, you come in with a elevated level of respect, and you're treated in an elevated way. And, you know, that has gone away for some of these guys and gals, not to just pick on
mostly guys, though, right?
There's a lot of men in that environment. Yeah, but right, I'm sure, right, it kind of goes both ways. So there is some question there to be asked, you know, that people don't want to talk about, right? It's, nobody wants to say it's my ego that's driving it. But, yeah, you know, they hide behind productivity declines. They hide behind, you know, just drops and, you know, all kinds of different things. But at the end of the day, we know people can be productive if they have choice and autonomy over where they do their work. And you're not going to have the same level of burnout, and your people are going to respect you if you respect them. And that's, I think that's a huge part of culture, is that feeling like you're valued, and how we put forth our workplace policies and what we give people to do their work. Yeah. That has a huge impact on how we perceive our culture.
Yeah. Yeah. If there is a toxic culture or a negative culture, a culture that is not supportive, like, how do you, is there a way that you or even an office manager can create positive experiences through the physical elements that they can control, or maybe just experiential? I guess I'm pinning it to physical, but maybe you'll say otherwise.
Yeah. Well, two things, I guess, on the side of, you know, what can I do to increase the experience or make a better experience for people without changing space? We talk about all the time, you know, like, bringing in opportunities to upskill people, creating different, you know, digital concierge services or things that allow people to, you know, make their lives easier. And those are things that we see clients rolling out and doing a lot more now. So it's not about, like, go out and spend a bunch of money and build a gym. That only will only ever cater to a small group of people that want to use the gym. Don't go out and, you know, spend tons of money on all of these different amenities. You can really do it with focusing on some of the content that you give people access to, you know, again, upskill, learn different things, give them food. God, they love their food. Give them food, free food. And, you know, and just some of those things go a really, really long way. In fact, somebody just told me recently that their son was looking to make a career move, and had been given, like, a stipend, basically. Like, they were working from home, and it was like, you get $50 a week or whatever to spend on, you know, Uber Eats or whatnot. And that was a huge factor in, do they stay or do they go? because if they left, they were losing out on that, like, quote unquote, lunch money. And that meant a lot to them as a, especially as a younger person, they really, they, that was a driver for them to stay where they were. So don't underestimate the power of food.
That's so interesting because yeah, it is $50, but it's also,
it's nothing for a company.
It's nothing for a company, but it's also like a signal. Like it's kind of going back to that, like we see you and care for you. I would think that's my guess, right?
It is. Like,
I don't know if, you know, that that person would say that, but I I'm thinking that it's like, oh, okay, you see what I'm, you know, I appreciate that, right? And it and it's nice. It's a treat, right? You're sort of getting that special, you know, thing, right?
So 100%.
That's great.
And if you're not going to, if you're in a toxic culture where people aren't going to, you know, management's never going to fund a $50 a week, you know,
right,
card like that. You as a manager could still try and push to do little things like that. Take your teams out, do something to show that you're investing in them and that you care. Give them, maybe give them a little bit more flexibility, cover for them a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
Because what you give to them, they should, you know, they'll mirror it back to you. And from a space perspective, you know, we try, if we're working with clients that are not into all of this stuff and, you know, they're given, they're just like, get it done, fast, get it done cheap, get us in, you know, butts in seats. That's all we care about. You know, we have seen a shift, one, in how codes are asking for us to do things. So for example, the code now requires that we have to have a mother's room in a facility.
Okay.
But can we make the mother's room serve dual purpose by taking the plumbing outside of the mother's room and maybe making it a little bit more of a suite? So now you have two small rooms and a little suite area outside so that the mother's rooms aren't limited to just moms. They can be used as wellness spaces for everybody. And then can you put those on a path of travel that's on the way to the restrooms or on the way to the cafeteria or, you know, some type of space that everyone uses so that people don't necessarily know where you're going when you get up from your desk and you're not, you know, put on blast because why are you using a wellness room in the middle of the day? So those are types of things that we can do in toxic cultures for clients, whether they know it or not, and just kind of work some of those things in.
Yeah. So where... let's cast our mind forward. Do you see any trends, anything that you either think or hope will become more accepted or requested as you're kind of, as we're sort of traveling away from the lockdowns, right? So away from the pandemic, we talked about the pre and the post pandemic, and before we didn't even talk about it. Now we're talking about it. Like, what are some things that you think, or either, and just, you know, declare it, right? Is it something that you see starting to see patterns, or something that you're like, I would love to like project this. I want this to happen in the future. I'd love for folks to be able to have this.
Oh, for years I've been wanting to have more robust wellness spaces. You know, we certainly have the clients now that are doing like the little, you know, you got four walls and a door and a lock and a chair. it's a wellness and room.
That's a wellness room. Okay.
That's a wellness room. Yeah. You're like, okay. You know, it's questionable. I personally would love to see more of the immersive technology get brought in, into workplaces to leverage, you know, like digital technology, projection mapping, color therapy, just a more sensory involved moment. So, you know, when you do go into these wellness spaces, you feel transported because that's a key element to, you know, things like attention restoration theory. And you know, that if you want to have a moment of revitalization, you need to feel like you're not in the moment that was stressing you out. And so just going into a room that looks like more of the office and closing a door behind you, it's a good start, you know, but some people would rather just do that in the bathroom stall, you know. And so the goal is like, let's get them someplace where they can really feel totally transported and refreshed. So that's something I would love to see get to a scalable point. And we are starting to see clients that are playing with different things in the technology world and doing some different aspects to merge a little bit more of the tech to do some of the heavier lift for, you know, stress relief and things. So that would be cool. I also would love to see that outside of just offices, traditional offices. We all have a workplace, but if you're in hospitality, if you're in retail, if you're in restaurants, if you're in education, you know, you have no place to go to refresh yourself for 5 minutes. And those places need it more than ever. So
I didn't realize it until you just said it. So I was in a hotel over the weekend and it was really nice. It was like a Kimpton, right? So they do a nice job aesthetically. And it was like dark woods and it was, you know, it's like lower lighting and it was wonderful. And then I saw one of the staff kind of walk out and then walk into one of the back rooms and you sort of open the door and it's like bright fluorescent lights and like just steel racks. And it's like, it's such a buzzkill. And and look, I understand you need, you know, you need kind of a more practical space, but it does, I don't know, it just struck me as like how different the spaces were. And it was right there, right? You're just like, oh my God, that's horrible. It's offensive. Right? You know, you're like, what the hell? So I feel for them. I mean, sometimes it's like, it's nice that you can work there, but then, you know, in a nice aesthetic space, but you have to like, you're like, I'm going to go to the luggage room. Blah.
Right. And you can't walk away and have that nice aesthetic space for yourself. So just that example is a perfect one of what are you saying to your employees in terms of who matters most in that kind of space? It's the client, it's the consumer, it's the person who's paying, not the employee. But that's backwards in my head, because your employee is going to be the face of your organization and the face that makes that person want to come back because they had a connection with them, or they were treated so poorly. They're like, I'm never coming back here. So, you know, I would love to see workplaces treated more equally when it comes to that bit.
So when you're talking about the space, the sort of the shifting kind of the senses, right, of the spaces, it seems like when you have those, or when I have experienced where the soundtrack, whatever is music or I don't know, ambient sounds, they're sort of different from one to the other, that strikes me as like really impressive as far as how different it makes the space feel. And it feels like a relatively easy way to kind of change the vibe of a space. What is your... This is my armchair architect talking.
You can absolutely do music in a lot of different ways. Interestingly, one of our biggest requests is for music in the restrooms. People hate quiet restrooms. So you can have a little bit more energized music in the restrooms, but you know, that's a big thing. People also want to have music when they first walk in. So like that initial threshold moment, you know, we talk about the importance of like the salient feature or like what's pulling you in, grabbing your attention and walking you into the space. So leveraging multi-sensory moments will really help with that energized music. In terms of just like soundtrack, though, in the background, nature sounds are really the best. And something that doesn't sound engineered, it needs to have enough of a mix behind it that you don't hear the same bird tweeting every 5 minutes. Or it'll make you crazy. Yeah. So we don't want to do that. But then also scents, like the adding smells. And we are seeing clients do more of that, especially in the hospitality realm, where they have like a customized scent that's made. So that's unique to them and their brand, but you have something that initiates a certain feeling or emotion when you walk in the door. So you don't have to pump it everywhere, but you know, entry, that's just a nice hit. And people should be able to say, it reminds me of something, but they shouldn't be able to say what the something
specifically
is.
Specifically what?
Yeah. If they say what it is, it's too strong. So that's something to keep in mind.
Is it too strong? I'm just going to nerd out about this for a second, because I do feel like we're decades behind on smell-o-vision, right? Like,
oh my gosh. Thing.
So when you...
They are emailing scents though now. Did you know that? Somebody figured out how to email a scent. Yeah.
What are you talking about? Do I have to, have a special USB?
You have to have a special printer. You got to have a special printer, but they will, you can email a scent, which I thought was crazy, but.
What the fuck? That's crazy. Oh my God. You're blowing my mind right now. Okay. You're throwing me off.
Sorry.
Too intense. Okay. So you're walking into a space and it has to like, what was I going to say about the reminding you? You said you reminded people, but it can't be specifics. It has to be the right level, right? It has to be, it can't be mm-hmm. too much or too little. Oh, right. What is it? Is it that you can scent, like you can go, oh, I can smell something, or you're just like, oh, I'm walking in and it kind of feels nice. Like, is there a moment when it like,
it feels nice.
It feels nice, right? It's not like, oh, what's that? It's not like you're walking into the mall, right? It's like there's something just sort of different. It doesn't feel like you've artificially created a scent, right? Like that's what
I think what we say about good design is you should never be able to point out what made it good.
Yeah.
You know, the same way you can point to something and say, I hate that design. This doesn't work. The light's bad or whatever, or I'm too cold. You know, that when you point out bad design, you shouldn't be able to point out good design. It should just feel good.
Yeah. So interesting.
And it makes people happier. And when you say that, when people are happier and people are relaxed and people feel that they're valued, that will help your culture because now people want to actually socialize and speak to one another. And, you know, those are kind of key things.
Yeah. Well, they're counteracting the stress that will inevitably show up, right?
Yeah.
Like in work. So interesting. This is fascinating. Well, I do think we are in a new moment for physical spaces and people are going, oh, we can't just assume that people are going to show up because we told them to, right? It's mm-hmm. like a really wonderful moment. So amazing. Valerie Jardin, Managing Director of Strategy for Interior Architects. You can learn more about their work at interiorarchitects.com. Val, so great to have you on Great Mondays Radio. Thank you for educating and sharing a little bit more about what it takes to create an amazing space that supports an amazing culture.
Absolutely. Thanks, Josh, for having me.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays, and you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.